This is Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast, and today I'm speaking with Scott Stevens. Scott is an employee benefits specialist located in Omaha, Nebraska. He specializes in alternative healthcare funding arrangements, including partial self-funding and consumer-directed health plans. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure, Srinivas.
So, Scott, how does the employer penalty work? What triggers it? And what do I need to be doing to plan for exposure to the penalty?
Well, of course, we're talking about the much focused on Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which was actually signed into law back in March of 2010. Provisions have been rolling out incrementally since that time, and arguably one of the largest scale and the most impactful aspects of that act, the so-called employer mandate or employer pay or play provision, or I guess more recently rebranded the employer shared responsibility, it goes into effect in January of 2014. So as employers are looking out to January 2014, which is just on the horizon, they're starting to ponder this whole penalty issue. So how the employer penalty works is actually based on, first and foremost, a test to see how large the employer is. It only affects the penalty associated with the Affordable Care Act, only affects employers that have 50 or more full-time employees. Obviously, that starts to beg the question, if I'm a 30-employee employer or 35 or 40, how do I count? Is there a way to get to 50 with my part-time employees? Well, yes, there is, and that's perhaps another question and another dialogue. But for the sake of the question you've posed, the penalty begins or affects employers with 50 or more. What triggers it really is a couple. There's a couple different ways it can be triggered, and there's a couple different penalty amounts. There's a $2,000 per employee penalty, and there's a $3,000 per employee penalty. So, in deference to the time that we have here, I'll just say that the basic question that the decision tree, if you will, begins with, first of all, are you 50 or more or not? So, I'm assuming the answer to that is yes. So the next question there is, are you going to offer a health plan or are you not going to offer a health plan? If you offer a plan, that is considered the play aspect of pay or play. If you do not offer a plan, that is the pay aspect of pay or play, which suggests that you will then pay a penalty. But that is not automatic. If you don't offer a health plan, that does not mean you're going to be automatically paying a penalty predicated on some count or some formula. What happens with respect to the Affordable Care Act is if you decide, let's start with the first scenario, that not to have a plan at all. You don't offer health insurance to your employees. In that event, if at least one of your employees goes to the so-called health insurance exchange or marketplace, and they're able to purchase coverage with a subsidy, with a tax credit, or with some government assistance, then that triggers a penalty that is equal to $2,000 per employee that you employ, starting with your 31st employee. So that's one of two triggers. If you decide to play, if you decide rather to offer a health plan, your health plan then has to meet two different tests, an affordability test and a minimum coverage test. The affordability test says that you can't charge your employees more than 9.5% of their W-2 wage from the previous year. And the minimum coverage test is you have to provide a plan that on balance covers at least 60% of the person's health related expenses. So if you play and you offer a plan and either or both of those tests are failed, if you have at least one employee go to the exchange and secure coverage with assistance, then that triggers a fine equal to $3,000 times the number of employees in your company that go to the exchange and purchase coverage with assistance. So those are the two different fines, and those are the various triggers to the fine. I think your last question associated with that, this issue, Srinivas, was what do I need to be doing to plan for exposure to the penalty? Well, first and foremost, employers need to do the count. They need to figure out how large they are and whether or not they have exposure. If they don't have exposure, then it's not an issue. If they do or they're not sure if they do, they need to start on the path of figuring out whether they have exposure. And then from there, it's really a matter of crunching the numbers, number one, and number two, evaluating how important the health insurance benefit plan offering is to being able to retain the employees that are now in that company and the ongoing ability to attract new talent to that firm. And let's face it, health insurance oftentimes is a very big attraction or lure for an employer.
So what sort of compliance issues do I need to be aware of relative to the Affordable Care Act?
That's another question that obviously those of us in this space are getting confronted with often. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misconstruing of what the law does and what it doesn't do. And I guess back to our previous question, if I'm under 50, then I don't need to worry about this law. And that's absolutely not true. There are aspects of this law, and by the way, the law is 2,700 pages in total, and there has been speculation from very wise people that for each page of the law, we will need 1,000 pages of regulations to implement it and to regulate it. So compliance issues are significant. I think employers need to very definitely consult with whoever their trusted advisors happen to be, whether that's their insurance broker, their attorneys, their accountants, some third-party vendor, and really have a very firm grasp of what this law does and what this law doesn't do, because compliance is significant. We have been told that there have been 1,000 IRS agents hired already by the federal government, and there has been funding put forth by the Health and Human Services Agency for the hiring of an additional 2,000 IRS agents. So the government is serious about enforcement and about compliance. And so employers definitely need to get their hands around, and I would suggest get their hands not only around the Affordable Care Act and what it requires and dictates, but also the whole raft of alphabet soup that we already know about within the employee benefit space, things like COBRA and HIPAA and family medical leave and Americans with Disabilities and ERISA. I mean, all the different laws and rules and regulations that we have now.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to sort of the third parties that are necessary, which we'll talk about here in just a second, are there any resources that people can go to educate themselves to really, I mean, obviously, I don't think anybody's going to read through 2,700 pages of regulations, right. But I mean, are there ways that we can sort of summarize this information or get the gist of it all through any resources?
Yes, very definitely, Sir Renovus, very, very definitely. I can speak here locally in my marketplace. I hosted a number of different webinars and seminars. I've seen a number of my competitors doing that, a number of law firms here in my marketplace, and I'm quite confident that that isn't unique. I think in all across the country right now, there are various service providers and firms and so forth that are offering seminars and webinars. The thing that I will throw out is that I can't even tell you how many of these I've attended over the last 2.5 years. And without question, every time I sit in on one, I pick up something else or several something else's. So I think it's important, to seek out those resources, find those seminars. And I can certainly help, within the Vistage community with that. I host actually a monthly call for Vistage members to break down and make aware various aspects of the Affordable Care Act. But it's not difficult to find, certainly. Those resources are out there.
So who can I look to for assistance with compliance and impact and strategy as it relates to the Affordable Care Act?
Well, that seems to be a little bit of a challenge right now. As I mentioned, the law is huge and massive in scope, 2,700 pages. It affects so much of what we do within organizations and companies, the benefits we offer, how we offer them, how we communicate to our employees, various disclosures that are required, and constant guidance and regulations and updates that are, flying fast and furious that we have to understand and comply with. In my opinion, the first line of defense should be an organization's insurance broker. and that sometimes that role goes by a different name. It's their insurance agent. It's their insurance consultant. It's their insurance provider. I mean, there's lots of different descriptions, but ultimately that individual or that service provider should be the starting point to everything you just said, you know, compliance with the law. What is the impact of the law on my company or my organization? Setting strategy for going forward with this law and with the various requirements of the law. So it could be a team of advisors. It could be your accountant. And it could be your broker. Certainly, it should be your broker, and it could be your attorney as well. You know, clearly on the accountant side of things, there are tax implications. There are tax credits potentially that a business could be eligible for that they will need assistance from their CPA to determine eligibility for that. And then clearly the compliance is the job of a good ERISA attorney. And there are, you know, many of those out there. But really, I think the quarterback to all this should be the insurance consultant. It should be the person on the street that you bought your insurance package from, or that you, you know, the person or the company that steered you in the direction that found you where you're at today as an employer offering a health insurance benefit plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott, I know you mentioned some resources initially. Are there places online where we can find out more about the work that you do, or where our listeners could be directed to? I know you mentioned also that you do some webinars for Vistage. Is there a little more other places where you can find out a little bit more about your work?
Yeah, although I'm sort of like the cobbler whose kids don't have any shoes. I have a website. My website is thehsatoolkit.com. That's thehsatoolkit.com, all one word. And that's actually a resource that I developed a number of years ago for the consumer-driven healthcare space. But that's and you can reach me through that website. My contact information is listed in there. And I'm more than willing to assist, you know, with either helping or directing to the right resource.
Excellent. Well, Scott, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today and share some of your insights on the Affordable Care Act. This has been Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast. And until next time, good luck with your business.